Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Black Motherhood Empowerment. I'm Denise Bowles, and thank you for joining me on the first day of May. Do you know what today is? Today is Teen Pregnancy Prevention Month. This is the start of it. Today, May 1st, and I'm very excited because my show is very personal and very professional for me. It's filled with resources, and the call-in number is 347-857-2381. That's 347-857-2381. Parents, relatives, foster parents, mentors, how many times did you have to have that talk when it comes about sex and all the intricacies of sex with the youth? It's a lot of work, and unfortunately, the world out there as we know it, they're misleading our kids and giving them a lot of misinformation. So where do you go to get the right information? Where do you go to get that empowerment and awareness? You're at the right place, right here at Black Motherhood Empowerment. Tonight, my special guest is Dr. Sheila Overton. She is the author of a wonderful resource called Before It's Too Late, What Parents Need to Know About Teen Pregnancy and STD Prevention. Sheila, are you with me?
Yes, I am, Denise.
All right. For the phone call tonight, we're going to be Dr. Overton. This is Dr. Overton on the phone right now with me, and we're going to have a wonderful discussion. The call-in number is 347-857-2381. Dr. Overton, I've read your book from cover to cover. I've marked it up, made it my own. I really have enjoyed this work that you've done. You've put a lot of work and consideration into this. Could you please tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure, Denise. I am an OBGYN physician, and I've been practicing for a little bit over 25 years. However, I started out as a nurse and then went on into medical school shortly after graduating from my nursing program. I have always been interested in health, certainly in the general perspective, but especially in women's health. And I decided early on that I wanted to devote my career to the practice of obstetrics and gynecology. And then within that profession, I have just developed this incredible passion for helping our teens, and especially in the area of prevention of teen pregnancy and sexually transmitted diseases. So I've kind of come a long way over the years. When I was in Los Angeles, I had the opportunity to become chairperson and co-founder of a program that was devoted to preventing teen pregnancy and sexually transmitted diseases and working with parents and teens. Okay. And it really allowed me to grow just in incredible ways and to learn even more about my specialty and about this very unique niche within my specialty, and to become so much more comfortable in dealing with the subject matter myself, because as physicians, we're still humans and we're parents and we face a lot of the same challenges that everybody else does, even though they may not be medically trained.
Yes,
so anyhow, that's what kind of got me going, and then I channeled the passion into this program and then into this book, and here I am now.
Oh, that's great, but you are a parent as well, are you not, Dr. Overton?
Absolutely.
Oh, that's great. So you can definitely understand what I was saying at the actual beginning of the show. And it's like, you know, you have to have that talk sometimes. And, you know, a lot of our parents, a lot of our guardians, a lot of our mentors out there really don't know how to approach the conversation. Maybe that they themselves have had a poor sexual experience or sexual encounters. Maybe they're not properly updated on the latest information in health and sexual health. Many of them just maybe have a religious adherence, and they'd rather not discuss it. They're uncomfortable with it. And so, you know, that's why I think that your book is a really great tool, because we need to engage our young people in the discussion of reproductive health. I think it's very, very important. I just saw an article today online about a new strain of gonorrhea that is resistant to antibiotics. And we really have to make sure that our young people are aware of what the responsibilities are out there as far as any kind of sexual relations. So now, Dr. Overton, I read this book from cover to cover, and I absolutely love it. I think it's a wonderful tool. Now, I want to talk to you about Chapter 2 in Teen Sexual Behavior. You want to talk a little bit about teen sexual behavior? Because, unfortunately, the media has misguided both the parent and the child quite a bit. So let's talk about teen sexual behavior.
Well, absolutely. Denise, if you don't mind, just before we even go into that, I just would like to touch on something that you commented in your commentary. And that just has to do with talking to our young people and to our children, and sometimes it's our nieces and nephews and just youth in general. But one thing that I really want to point out early on is that parents around the country, around the world, have difficulty with this subject. It's not limited to just any one particular group of parents. It just cuts across every swath of our society. And there's so much research on this subject that just pinpoints that parents say over and over again that they really feel awkward about talking with their teens, and teens feel awkward about talking with their parents. And what I would say to your audience is that we can move beyond that, and it really is possible to do so with information and just with a kind of a belief in ourselves and a confidence in ourselves and in our teens as well, because we do tend to get from not just society, but I think in general we tend to look at teens as this very risky group. Mm-hmm. And yes, there are risks in the teenage time. It's a very difficult time for many kids to kind of navigate through. There's so many things that they're having to deal with, especially in society today, all the different challenges that are out there. But at the same time, we have to kind of still have that confidence in them that they can, you know, protect themselves, and they can adhere to our values, and they can do really well and fulfill all their potential. And I think that most children can with the right amount of support. And the one thing that I would say then to parents is this: understand that feeling awkward about talking about the subject with their kids is normal, okay? But that we don't want that to hold us back. And that's one of the reasons that I wrote the book, was to help parents to feel more comfortable talking with their parents. And it's not one talk. It's a conversation.
And that's why, Dr. Overton, I did not label this show today a black, white, or Latino, because in my profession as well as being a sex educator, a sexual health educator rather, I do see that no matter what ethnicity the parent is, they are having challenges with this subject. Okay. So I agree with you 1,000%. This is not a black situation. This is not a white situation. This is not a Latino situation. This is not an Asian situation. This is not a gay situation. This is not a straight situation. Many parents across the divide, across all of it, have challenges when it comes to talking to youth about reproductive health, about sexual health. You know, we've labeled them Generation X, and we put them aside and said, you know what, here's the internet, you can do this. And a lot of it has been a lot of misconceptions, a lot of stigmas, a lot of misinformation, and that's why I applaud this book that you were able to put together with your own experiences, because it really can help in starting that conversation.
I think absolutely so. I don't think there's a parent that would walk away from reading the book without feeling empowered, and that was really what I tried to do with the book, was to kind of help, you know, replace some of this, the fear and the anxiety that parents naturally feel around the subject of talking about sex and guiding their teens towards really healthy and responsible and values-based decisions about sex. To take away the fear, take away the anxiety, and replace it kind of with a newfound confidence.
Right.
And new language that they can use in guiding teens. And I really, I would say that I've read the book more than once myself, and I, you know, I have gotten that from, you know, from the book, and it's not just for parents, it's for health educators and for others.
Which is a wonderful, it's a multidimensional tool. I want to move on, Dr. Overton, because I don't want to tie up the show too long tonight. I want to make sure that we can get in as much information at the time that we have. I want to talk about Chapter 2 with you and about the teen sexual behavior. And the reason why that chapter stuck out so much for me, no pun intended, is the fact that a lot of times when I'm talking to young people, they are the most curious group of people. and they are misunderstood. A lot of people will identify that curiosity as promiscuity, as being deviant, as being fresh, as being oppositional. They're labeling it everything else. And these kids just have questions. They have questions. They're curious. They don't understand a word. They don't understand the behavior. So that's why I thought Chapter 2 was very, very important.
Right, right. Well, you know, in Chapter 2, I talk about the fact that, you know, certainly when it comes to teen sex behavior, there are a lot of issues, obviously, that come up. But one of them is just in talking with teens about sex, and we talk about sex behavior, we have to be very clear with our children, with our teenagers, because what may be sexual activity to one teen may not seem like sexual activity to another teen. So, you know, are they having what we call standard sex, which is, you know, vaginal penetration between a male and a female, or are they having oral sex, which is very common among teenagers? As a matter of fact, studies have shown that oral sex, especially among teen boys, is more common than what we consider, you know, standard penetration sex.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be careful about that. And then, of course, that, you know, there's the misconceptions about, okay, is oral sex sex? A lot of teens, some studies show that sometimes up to 50% or higher would not consider that sex. But yet, you can certainly get a sexually transmitted infection.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And there actually are types of sexual activity that don't involve oral sex or standard sex, but just basically, you know, I guess what they used to call fooling around, perhaps, that can also lead to sexually transmitted infections. So I think when it comes to teens and the way we talk about sex with them, we have to be very clear, because
right.
we cannot be on the same wavelength. If we say, you know, start talking about sexual activity without being very clear with our teen, you know, that we're talking about all types of sexual activity that, you know, certainly may not all lead to pregnancy, but certainly can all be associated with different types of sexually transmitted infections.
Yes, yes, and a lot of other complications there, too. In Chapter 2, Dr. Overton, you're talking also about what's love got to do with it. Now, that's a big topic when I talk to young people and sex. You know, well, I love him, so right. I'm going to do this. You want to put your two cents in on that?
Yeah, well, that's true. When we the program that I ran in Los Angeles, I ran for 10 years, and we would bring teens and parents together at least usually a couple times a year and put on a seminar and also do surveys. And when we asked teens what was, you know, one of the major reasons that they decided to have sex, the thing that rang out the loudest was the feeling that they were in love, or that these romantic feelings. And so it's important for us as parents and educators and healthcare providers to realize and not underestimate these romantic feelings that young people have towards each other. And what we can do as parents is kind of help our very young teens especially understand that, you know, well, kind of what is real love versus what is infatuation. And let them know that, you know, they may have very intense feelings for a young person, but that doesn't necessarily equate with love in the sense that I think many adults would equate mm-hmm. that those feelings with. So sometimes we need to kind of help them to kind of stand back a little bit and realize that, you know, what they may have these intense feelings for this young person at this point in time, but maybe in 3 months they won't.
Right, right.
Won't. And so, you know, maybe they don't want to commit themselves to, you know, a completely intimate relationship at an early stage, you know, in their relationship with this other person.
Right, right. You know, I agree, and I'll say it again, and I'll probably say it a gazillion times tonight. These kids are just inherently curious, and most of the things that they're doing is strictly out of curiosity. They're exploring. They're trying to figure things out. They're reading this thing. They're hearing this song. They're seeing this in the movies. They're trying to figure it out. So a lot
of you hit upon an important issue there, Denise, and that is just – the whole issue, the whole realm of the media and how the media does affect our youth and the images that are out there. As you know, and everybody else knows, we live in a very highly sexualized society.
Yes.
And what the research tells us is that over 75% of primetime TV programming does contain sexual content.
Yes.
And a lot, and actually, when you look at programming that is aimed towards youth, the sexual content is even higher.
Yes.
And then we take it a little bit further and talk about the fact that where's the responsibility? You're not going to generally find that. Less than 10% of these programs depict any type of responsibility associated with that sexual behavior. So teens looking at, you know, the TV and movies, internet, whatnot, they may see a lot of sexual encounters, but rarely are they going to see birth control. Rarely are they going to see the negative impact of, you know, of a pregnancy or a sexually transmitted infection resulting from that behavior. And so that's one of the things that as parents and educators and, you know, healthcare professionals, we have to kind of talk to our kids about the fact that, you know, media and what they see on TV and in the movies does not represent real life.
No, it does not.
If they try to model their behavior after, you know, what they're seeing on the screen, then, you know, that's a risk factor. And we know from the research that kids who watch a lot of TV are at increased risk for risky sexual behavior and teen pregnancy.
Right.
So parents, this is one area where parents can make a big difference by really tuning in as to what their children are viewing on TV, and also, you know, talking with them about the images that they see and
right.
how that, you know, how they have responsibilities and that aren't being portrayed, you know, on
right.
the screen.
Right. And, you know, the whole thing of action and consequences.
Exactly.
Action and consequences. Action and consequences in parenting, in mentoring, in foster parenting, any type of interaction with our youth, they have to engage in the concept of action and consequences. I think that's very, very important. I think a lot of that has been blurred with this generation of today with high technology and what they're basically immersed in all day long called social media, that action and consequences have really been blurred. So to have that talk with your youth or with the youth in your life, as far as sex is concerned, there has to be a talk of action and consequences. Sure, you like that person, you have feelings for that person. What will be the consequences of the actions that you are about to engage in? There has to be an open, frank discussion about that. And Dr. Overton's book really can help the parents and foster parents and mentors out there to engage in this dialogue with the youth. So now, I want to touch very quickly, because I don't want to use up all of our time. The call-in number for questions is 347-857-2381. That's 347-857-2381. You're here tonight with Denise Bowles on Black Motherhood Empowerment. Our special guest is Dr. Sheila Overton. She's the author of Before It's Too Late, What Parents Need to Know About Teen Pregnancy and STD Prevention. Now, my mom, as everybody knows who's followed my show, my mom was a teen mom at 16. We've heard all of the disadvantages. We've heard all of the stigmas about teen pregnancy. And being a medical social worker, I can tell you it's a lot of work with teen pregnancies. Many of these babies come out requiring special needs that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars of intervention to get them to a normal platform in life. It's a drain on resources, a drain on the community. There really is a lot going on with teen pregnancy, so I don't want to continue to beat that horse because we've heard a lot about it. But Dr. Overton, I have to ask you, could you briefly explain or touch upon teen pregnancy? Because it is here in your book, and
exactly.
I don't want to exclude it.
Absolutely. Now, teen pregnancy is certainly been a passion of mine in terms of prevention of that. But one of the things I want to say to your viewers is that we are, as a society, doing much better with teen pregnancy over the past two decades. We actually have had some historic drops in teen pregnancy in the past 20 years. As a matter of fact, rates are down about 42%. And so it's really a tremendous thing. So I don't want to, we shouldn't paint this all as a totally negative picture. Yes,
right.
One of the things that I always get a little concerned about, though, is that this is the issue. Teen pregnancy rates in our country have been so tremendously high that even though we are down 42%, we're still at really high numbers, and we still have roughly 1 in 3 teen girls becoming pregnant each year in our society. So we're doing a lot better, and we want to acknowledge that, and we want to look at what's been working, but we still have to look at the fact that we've got a long ways to go. We can also look at teen birth. Teen birth is down significantly in our country. It's dropped almost 50%, and among all racial groups. So that's a really positive thing. And I will point this out, which most people, you know, or some people may know, certainly African American and Hispanic teen girls have had higher rates of teen pregnancy, continue to have rates that are about 2.5 times higher than their white counterparts. And so, you know, it has been more of an issue. It's an issue across the board, yes, but it's impacted the these minority communities more so than the majority community. Having said that, let me just tell you that I think when we look at teen pregnancy, the impact is significant. You touched upon the fact that yes, they're at higher risk for low birth weight babies or preterm babies, and so that can certainly lead to problems. Certainly, we know that one of the biggest issues with teen pregnancy is that the education is halted for many, many teen parents. If you are a young teenager today and you get pregnant and you give birth before the age of 18, you have about a 38% chance of finishing high school.
Right.
So that tells you right there, you know, what the odds against this young person and her child are. And so that's one of the most huge impacts about teen pregnancy. And, of course, we can step next door to that and say, well, then poverty. You know, we can kind of make that correlation as to why teen moms and their children are relegated so often, not always, because there are exceptions, and there are significant exceptions to this, but so often the poverty rates among teen moms are so high, and new statistics that have come out have suggested that probably close to about 65 or higher percentage of teen moms will receive some sort of public assistance within that first year.
Right.
So those are some major issues in terms of the impact of teen pregnancy, and that's not something that we tend to talk about a lot. You hear about those statistics. You know, this is the number of teen pregnancies this year, and this is where we've changed over the last few years, but we tend not to talk so much about the impact. And let me just also touch upon this. What we also know is that most teen moms do not stay with that father.
That's right.
And
As
you alluded to earlier, I mean, this whole issue about infatuation versus real love, you know, it comes very much into play when we look at teen pregnancy and relationships. And we know, as I said, probably, you know, over 80%, probably close to 85% of teen moms, you know, are not going to be with the person who impregnated them.
Exactly.
And beyond, if they do happen to be one of the ones that marry, the odds of divorce are 2 to 3 times higher than if they had married when they were in their 20s and had a child when they were in their 20s.
Right.
So those are just some of the social issues around the topic of teen pregnancy.
Right, right. That's an excellent point, Dr. Overton, and I just want to repeat that for our listeners again. Most times than not, you will not be with that baby's father if you have a baby for this person. So that is something that is definitely a factor that you have to think about in this type of situation. And a lot of girls, you know, don't contemplate that. And unfortunately, in today's society, you know, the idea of family court and getting child support is not as glamorized as what you're seeing on reality TV. It's a struggle, okay?
Oh.
It's definitely a struggle. So I want to talk briefly about, because I've had several shows on this topic, Dr. Overton, I want to talk briefly about sexually transmitted infections. And I teach this stuff all the time to our young people. A lot of them don't know that you can contract a viral STI, sexually transmitted infection, just from kissing. So you don't have to actually engage in sex. But herpes, if someone has herpes and they have an outbreak and you kiss them, you can contract the herpes virus. and you don't have to have sex with that person. So can we touch on the chapter that you have here in your book, chapter 4, on sexually transmitted infections?
Yes. Well, what I would say is that there's a huge concern about sexually transmitted diseases or infections, and we use the terms interchangeably, just,
yes,
you know, for people out there. I think most people still do use the term sexually transmitted disease, but it's the same as sexually transmitted infection. And there is a big, huge concern because, unlike with teen pregnancy, rates of sexually transmitted infections among our youth and teens in particular are rising for most infections. And let me just point this out to you that, especially I look at, because I'm an obstetrician, certainly I see females, I don't see males. However, in the 15 to 19-year-old age group, which is one of the great groups that the Centers for Disease Control studies, we know that rates of gonorrhea are highest among teen girls in that 15 to 19-year range. It's really, it's just really sad. I mean, and we look at chlamydia, which is a very, very common sexually transmitted infection. The rates among 15 and 19-year-olds are the second highest. They're just under the 20 to 24-year age group. But actually, just within the last 2 years, the 15 and 19-year-old group had the highest rates of chlamydia as well.
Uh-huh.
And when we look at HIV, what we know is that youth, and when the CDC looks at HIV in youth, we're typically looking at 13 to 24-year-olds, comprising about 25% of the population, but 50% of all new HIV infections. So I'm just bringing these statistics out to kind of acquaint your audience with the fact that our youth are at high risk for sexually transmitted infections. And yes, some of these infections, especially what we call the herpes virus and the human papilloma virus, can be contracted without sex in what we call the standard sex, you know, vaginal penetration by the penis. I don't know if you want me to just touch a little bit on HPV. It can be both HPV and herpes. Basically, what we look at them, they can be contracted by skin-to-skin contact is the way we usually look at that. So that, you know, with youngsters or, you know, with youth, if they're kind of what they call, quote-unquote, fooling around and, you know, having sexual activity but not having, they don't have to be having either oral sex or vaginal penetration sex, just kind of if one of the partners has the herpes or the what we call human papilloma virus within their skin in the genital area, and there's touching of that skin, then the other person can contract that. So and that's something that most, you know, teens don't know, and so they, you know, it's an important point to get across to them that and there's certainly oral sex will lead to most of the infections can be transmitted through oral sex.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, again, these are things that teens don't always think about. And one of the things that I want to point out that is so important when it comes to sexually transmitted infections is that most of them are asymptomatic.
That's right. And asymptomatic for our listeners simply means you don't have any signs or symptoms until it is really at a latter stage in the cycle. So you could be walking around and having sex on the second, get infected, and you won't have any kind of display of any symptoms until the 27th of the month. So you've been walking around having sex and doing all kinds of other things for the past 3 weeks, not even aware that you've been infected.
Right, right. Yeah, most significant number of people have infections and they are asymptomatic. I mean, I can tell you about HIV. CDC statistics would suggest that, you know, I think it is upwards of about 50% of youth who, you know, may not be aware that they are infected. So if you can, you know, think about that, they're, as you said, perhaps out there having intimate relationships with other people, spreading these infections and totally unaware of it. And it's one of the things, I think, Denise, that we have to stress upon our youth. I mean, there are a lot of issues, and I know we don't have time through this interview to talk about the whole gamut of challenges that teens and sexual health encompass, but one of the things is that, you know, I try to talk to patients in my office is if they're mature enough to have a sexual relationship, then they need to, as we talked about before, responsibility is so incredible, and it's so incredibly important for us as adults to get that point across to them. So they should be responsible enough not only to be tested themselves for sexually transmitted infections, but to insist that their partner be tested for sexually transmitted infections. And if they're not comfortable doing that, then maybe that means that they're really not mature enough to be involved in a sexual relationship.
Right, right. Excellent, excellent point, Dr. Overton. Excellent, excellent point. So all of this is being said to our listeners out there, because if your teen, if your youth comes home with a permission slip saying, look, they're having the speaker come in, or look, there's this after-school workshop, please sign and give consent, because if you have any kind of hang-up or ambivalence to have the discussion, at least let the youth get the resource and not be completely excluded from obtaining the resource. Because there's a lot of intricacies, as Dr. Overton and myself are speaking about here, that really has to be spoken about. It has to be discussed. It has to be explored. It has to be questioned. And it's really good when teens can do this amongst their peers and have a discussion group. And these workshops, they make them very fun and very user-friendly. So I would strongly suggest that anyone would take great advantage of those. So, Dr. Overton, I wanted to chapter 5 to me has to be the biggest chapter in the book, okay? And chapter 5 is talking and guiding your teen about sex. What parents really need to know? Dr. Overton, what do parents really need to know?
Well, if they go to my website, which is www.dr.overton.org, they will find my book.
Okay.
And I just have to tell you, this subject matter, we could go on for days and days and days talking about it. It's there's just so much out there. But, you know, I think that when it comes to guiding your kids, one of the things that I think is so important for parents is that they really do believe that they can be successful at it.
Okay.
They, you know, so many parents, as I've mentioned before, report in different surveys that they just, you know, they don't know what to say and they don't know how to say it. And what I would say myself as a physician and somebody who's been involved in this area for many, many years is that you know what to do, that you really do, and the information is something that you can educate yourself about. A lot of the information you already have, but certainly you can educate yourself more so. But what I like to do is take the issue of sexual health and guiding our teens about sex and put it in the same ballpark as every other task that we have as parents in raising our children. And one of the things I talk about in Chapter 1 of my book is just, you know, we bring the little bundles of joy home from the hospital, and most new parents don't have much of a clue about what to do, okay?
Right. They don't come with instructions, Dr. Overton. Not yet,
right.
Anyway.
There's no cookbook about how to care for that newborn, but parents do it, don't they? They have some instinctual, you know, kinds of vibes, I guess, you know, in terms of what to do, but they also get advice, right? They read books, they get help from their parents, from their aunts and uncles, from their community, and it's no different when it comes to teen sexual health in terms of guiding our kids. We have some instinctual knowledge about what to do, but we've got to be educated as parents. And we also have to get help. We have to get help from our healthcare professionals, because we're here to help, you know, share that burden with parents. We have to get help from our educators and the school system. And as I said, as I say in the book, and as it's been said before, this is one of the areas where it really does take a village to really raise children and teenagers who are sexually healthy and able to make values-based and responsible decisions, okay? So I think that's one of the most important things, is just for parents to believe, to have that confidence and to be positive that they are very capable of guiding their kids in the right direction and imparting their values, which is the other thing that I would say is so important for parents. And early on in the stage when they're thinking about these things is to kind of clarify their values.
Mm-hmm.
What do they really think about teens and sexual relationships? You know, do they feel that the teen, they do not want their child having sex until a certain point in time or until they're married? Whatever it is, these are areas where I personally, as a health professional, would say, you know, I don't look at there as being, you know, areas of being right or being wrong, but I think it's important for parents to know what they think before they can really impart, you know, their values to their children and to give it some time and to give it some thought.
Right, right. And in Chapter 5, Dr. Overton, you do have a whole topic there about values clarification. So you're definitely talking about what's in your book, and I do appreciate that. So, you know, Chapter 5 is definitely worth the entire book as far as I'm concerned. And for parents who don't know how to broach the subject, I think getting a book and reading it and leaving it out on the table definitely starts a conversation. It's a great icebreaker. But to me, Chapter 5 is very, very powerful. It's very, very empowering. And I think it's very, very important that that attitude and that approach that Dr. Overton is talking about, that you can do this, definitely does happen. And Dr. Overton covers many different things here in Chapter 5 about, you know, how can I prevent my teen from having sex? How can I start the questioning? And she also gives a lot of good empowerment strategies about being prepared. If you don't know something, jump on the internet and go to a .org facility like the Centers for Disease Control, your local Department of Health, or, as she said, also your local physician, and get the correct answer. And also, too, not to be as wordy, to be, you know, a little bit more short in your answers. Remember what you were like yourself when you were a teenager. All of these tips are very, very helpful, and I think it's one of the most important chapters here in the book, and I think it's very, very worthwhile. So I really applaud you for hitting all those high-end topics in Chapter 5, Dr. Overton. It's really, really important.
Yes, you know, Denise, one thing I would say is that certainly, as you mentioned, yeah, the shorter is better is a really good thing. As I mentioned earlier, avoiding the quote-unquote talk, that really should go out the window. And these are conversations that we're going to have with our kids. We're going to have them frequent. We're going to look for teachable moments.
That's right.
And we're when our kids are really, you know, they're ready to hear the information. So we wanted to make it a part of kind of our life and not put it way out here in the corner where it's something that's awkward and difficult. We want it to be something that we kind of talk about on a regular basis. You know,
Right. That's easy. Right. And that's powerful, Dr. Overton. It's not a one-shot deal, listeners. This is not a one-time conversation. It grows and it evolves as that child develops and evolves. So that's powerful, Dr. Overton. I really appreciate you saying that.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, you know, the rest of the book, listeners, is very, very good also. Dr. Overton covers a chapter on contraception, which is very important also, and, you know, about STDs and STIs, about vaccines with them. I want to wrap it up, Dr. Overton, about some of your pearls of wisdom. What would be some of your pearls of wisdom you'd like to leave with our listeners about this very important subject? Because to me, this subject is one of the foundations of a child's life. And if it's done incorrectly, I think it will have a huge impact on their future. So that's why I think this is very important.
Right, right. Well, again, I would just reiterate some of the things that I've already said. And one is that just believing that you are definitely capable of guiding your teen towards very healthy and, you know, responsible decisions about their sexual health. And, you know, certainly being careful about, you know, clarifying your values and knowing, you know, what you really think and what it is that you really want to get across, that you're going to keep talking to your kids, that you're going to not just have it be one conversation, that you're going to, you know, have frequent conversations, and you're going to look for teachable moments, times when things that just come up in everyday life that, you know, let's say, for instance, your child comes home and talks about, you know, the fact that some other child in their school got pregnant. I mean, that's a perfect opportunity.
Right, right.
About, you know how these things happen and how to avoid them. I think that one of the things we want to do is remember that we don't have to be perfect as parents in trying to guide our kids and the different talks and different things that we're going to have. Just letting go of that and knowing maybe we say the wrong thing at one point in time. We give the wrong information. It's okay. You know, we can go back and we can correct the information. And again, that just speaks to the point about the whole awkwardness and the difficulty that parents have and oftentimes feeling that somebody else can do this task better than they can. I just want to get that eliminated. I want parents to know that they can do it and that they don't have to be perfect. They just have to show concern and love and let their kids know that they're there for them. And the kids really do want to know what their parents think.
Right.
Really do care about what they think. And if we present the information to them in a way that's at their level, they're going to get it. And another thing I would say is just please utilize us as healthcare professionals.
Yes.
You know, we're here to help you. And sometimes the kids are going to certainly be able to talk with a healthcare professional in a different way than they do with their parents and listen in different ways. And so that's something that I think all parents definitely want to do is involve the healthcare system in this goal that we have of protecting our children.
Great, great resource, great resource. Dr. Overton, I can't thank you enough for joining me on the show tonight. This book, your book, is a wonderful resource tool for health educators, for teachers, for parents, for guardians, for mentors. It's a wonderful tool that just covers ethnicities. It covers everyone. It's just not a one-sided book. This is a very universal tool, and I thank you very much for putting it all together. Could you just tell our listeners, I put it up on the chat room, Dr. Overton's book is sold at Amazon.com. It's also in Kindle form, so it is an e-book as well. But Dr. Overton, could you just tell the listeners how they could reach you and how they can get your book?
The easiest way to actually get the book, you certainly can go to Amazon.com, but if you go to my website, which is www.dr, and it's doctor with a D-R, not spelled out, but droverton.org, then you'll get to my website. There are lots of tabs on there, and one of them is purchase the book or buy the book, and that link will take you directly to Amazon. So it's probably the easiest way to go about getting both either the soft cover of the book or the ebook format.
Well, that's
also
fantastic.
A lot of good information on the website too.
Oh, that's great.
One of the things about the book is there is the chapter 10, which is a lot of resources.
Yes.
A lot of websites, a lot of different organizations and things like that. But if you need additional information about resources, you can contact me through the website as well.
It'll
go
to
my one of my email sites. Mm-hmm. And I can't give health information or, you know, health advice per se, but I certainly can help with resources through that site.
Right. Well, that is absolutely awesome. Dr. Overton, thank you very much. I do hope in your future endeavors, if you're writing any more tools to help families and help communities, that you will keep me in mind. I think this is a wonderful tool, and I'm really glad. I just want the listeners to know, how did I find Dr. Sheila Overton? Last year when I was doing my whole thing as a Democratic delegate for President Obama, Dr. Overton came up on one of Obama's parenting pages as a parent resource, and I saw her book and I saw her work, and I said, wow, I've got to get her on the show. And that's how I actually met Dr. Overton, is through President Obama. So, you know, sometimes this stuff really does work out there. You know, social media can be an empowerment tool, believe it or not. So, Dr. Overton, thank you so much for joining me. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and I'm really, really glad to be able to put your work out there through this show and getting, you know, parents and everyone who interacts with teens to be able to utilize this resource. The show is archived, so they can listen to it and come back anytime they'd like, and I know it's going to be utilized quite a bit.
Denise, thank you very much. It was just my pleasure to have this opportunity to talk about teen sexual health and hoping that our parents feel that they are a little bit more empowered by this conversation. And I hope that I hear from some of them as well.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Dr. Overton has a web page of drdroverton.com and .org. And .org, and she also has her book for sale on Amazon.com. It's in ebook form as well as a soft cover. So if you have an e-reader, you can still download the book, and you can read it right away and get into the chapters that we talked about right away. This show is archived, so you can listen to it later. You can share it with your friends. You can share it with your colleagues. You can share it at your schools, at your PTA meetings, at your parenting groups to get the conversation started. So thank you all once again for listening to the show. I'm Denise Bowles. You're here with Black Mother Empowerment. You can find me here on Block Talk Radio. Please befriend me. Follow my show. I have some other great shows coming up for the spring and into the summer. And you can also find me on Facebook. I'm the author of Raising Princess to Be Kings, A Single Black Mother's Guide to Raising Her Black Son. And I really do appreciate bringing to you the resources that promote empowerment and awareness for families and communities. So Dr. Overton is certainly part of my group now, and I'm really, really proud to be able to have her on the show with me this evening. So thank you, everyone, for listening, and have a great evening.
Thank you, Denise. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dr. Overton. Take care.